This is Superhero Time with XV.
How now, Ken's cow?
And Ken.
Okay, so this week, in lieu of your normal Superhero Time programming, we have Garo, Makino Hana, all of it at once.
Because why not?
So, naturally, for this purpose, we are not joined by Himiki, Paladin, or Fort Max, who really can't give a crap about Garo unless it's the one who shines in darkness, and I can't really blame them for that.
I do miss that, but alas.
Like, you know, four Garo series in and however many movies, even though I haven't seen two of them, because fan subs, hello?
Well, the Kogan Wonderland came out.
That's right, I was waiting for Legs the movie.
Alas.
I'm sure that'll happen at some point, just
randomly
so
out of the blue.
When they can get around to it, I guess.
It's only been, you know,
a year?
60 months.
Oh.
It came out last July. Last July.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyways, I was saying, though, four series and however many movies I've actually seen into this, The One Who Shines in Darkness is still easily my favorite Garo series.
I like it a lot, although I do kind of feel like it's comparing apples to oranges, because it's really different in approach and budget.
It is, but that's... It's really different in approach, but I think that's what I ended up liking about it the best.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it was taking the universe and trying to do something new with it.
Which also Seal of Flames does, but I've only seen one episode into that so far.
I haven't seen any of it.
Oh, it's interesting. It's definitely not like trying to... I don't mean that in a bad way. It's not trying to, you know, tie into the same universe, though it's taking the mythology, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's like overlaid over like a Magitek fantasy world.
Magitek, that's an interesting word.
Well, it's kind of like, it's like, that almost looks like technology, but it's not quite, and this looks like a fantasy show, so. Mm-hmm.
I could swear I've seen something else on that approach, but I can't, like, name it.
Yeah, same here. But it's interesting. I really like the way that in that show that Garo himself is, or the Makai Knights in general, are animated, where it's kind of like, well, that sort of looks like CGI, but not quite. So it blends itself really well to the animation.
So it's really good cell shading is what you're saying?
Yes, yes, yes.
I suppose that would be important under the circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
Especially as detailed as the armor is, I can't imagine somebody actually like hand animating that.
Oh, God, no. Even if it does look like a high-budgeted series, and it's probably only going to run it probably a season, I'd imagine. Although, then again, since Funimation picked it up, it might be a two-season show, because they don't usually seem to focus on the shorter shows.
I was just thinking, too, imagine Sailor Moon Crystal's quality applied to Garo.
Well, that's Toei.
I know, but still. Like...
Yeah, they're... all caps quality.
You know, were they having to reanimate basically the entire episode for the Blu-ray version?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen a few shows that have done that. I'm honestly surprised that Toei is doing that, because Toei? Mm-hmm. But Sailor Moon is enough of a cash cow that they're going to. Mm-hmm. But it's really odd with that show, considering that it, A, took so long to come out, and B, is bi-weekly. So it doesn't have the same excuse that One Piece or Pretty Cure have, where they are a new episode every week, every year, for years.
Yeah.
Those shows I can understand. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, it's a weekly show, whatever, I forgive that. You go to that one, it's like,
yeah, this is going to be 26 episodes spread out over basically a year.
Yeah. So the last time I saw a show that did that was like, I don't know, Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. And look at, I mean, that's kind of not a good comparison when you consider that.
Was Standalone Complex not a weekly?
No, Standalone Complex was bi-weekly. And yeah, it was bi-weekly originally in Japan when you had such memorable fan subs as Naked Child Incense. Yes.
See, I only ever watched the Ghost in the Shell series when they were dubbed, and of course, then they were aired weekly, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's honestly a really good way to watch it because it is one of the best dubs I have seen. I put it up there with, like, Cowboy Bebop.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I put it up there with. I mean, it's basically the same people doing it, so.
Well, you didn't really have Steve Blum in a lead role in Ghost in the Shell, did you?
Yeah, you did. He,
Was he Togusa?
No, that was Crispin Freeman. Steve Blum was the Laughing Man.
Oh.
If I recall right. Yeah, I believe that's right, though.
Well, he was only a lead role in the first season, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, Garo.
Well, it wouldn't be superhero time if we didn't,
Oh, yes, I know.
diverge.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, like coming off of The One Who Shines in Darkness, this season was kind of hard to get into.
I mean, that's not, I don't think, really think that's the actual show's fault necessarily. It's more the fact that this is more than like the previous series, even though it is like obviously continuing the fact that it is a much bigger franchise now. It feels a lot more like Amamiya coming back and just saying like, you know what? I'm just gonna do whatever. Even though, if I recall right, Mikano Ohana is based off a novel series for that comes like was released over the past few years or something. If I recall right, I might be completely wrong, so don't take that as complete fact. But regardless, its pacing is very much different than the other series in the fact that it is basically just a bunch of standalone episodes, and then there's kind of some plot at the beginning and tie it together.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a standard Garo series rather
Well,
than.
even more so because, like, in the first series, once you hit the halfway point, you get plot, and that's basically half the series. Same thing happened with Mikai Senki. Once they,
Well, kind. Well, I mean,
I
they
mean,
had their overarching plot set up in Mikai Senki in the first two
well,
episodes.
Mikai Senki especially though, once you hit the plot, it really just took over everything in the show. There were still a couple of standalones towards the end of the first season of Garo, but in Mikai Senki, it just like overtook everything basically. Because there, once you hit that plot in Mikai Senki, there was no more standalone episodes really.
The sense I got watching through Mikai no Hana was more like it's trying to go back to what Garo was originally, which is a lot of standalone episodes, and yeah, a little thread to tie it together the whole way through, but for the most part that's not important. It's just like, let's play in this universe for a little while and see what happens.
Yeah, even it feels like it's even less important than it has been in any other series.
Like, Mikai Senki kind of did well because they had a bigger cast of characters to work
Right, because they
with,
had the original
the
season, they
first
added people.
series, two TV movies and a theatrical movie, I think, to
They
draw
added
through.
people in the show as they went on.
And they basically turned Mikai Senki half the time into an anthology series.
Yeah, because it wasn't always Koga. It was sometimes Ray. One time it was Jabby.
Yeah, I mean, Jabby got a focus episode all to herself, which was amazing.
Considering what happened to her in the first series.
Right. Although she was also the focus of one of the movies, too.
That we have not seen.
No,
Or no,
one
yeah,
of
that's
the
right.
original movies.
Beast of the Midnight Sun?
Getting her back was the main plot point
Right.
for that.
Because they realized they'd done screwed up.
But, jumping to the next generation of characters, minus Gonza, of course, you're kind of hemming yourself in a little bit as far as how wide you can range on this, and
Oh,
that kind of showed through.
it does, and because it is a bunch of standalone episodes, more so than again any other series, really. You have some of the episodes that are actually really, really, really strong, like the horror movie episode that we actually covered on the show, or that really creepy one with the mantis horror where that was abducting women, but you didn't realize it until the end of the episode.
Yeah, that one stood out to me too. Like there was I would say three episodes out of the whole series that really stuck out to me.
And definitely make it worth having been a thing that happened, I think. I also really like the flashback episode with Ray.
That was that okay, so that's my third one.
Yeah,
So,
so we're a similar mindset.
movie madness, the inverted expectations, and then Ray showing up to basically make a better version of the Koga training episode from the first series.
Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to send you to a boot camp. I'm going to do this myself.
But I mean, at the same time, the circumstances of that, it's really easy to see Koga at, one day just pulling Rei aside and being like, "Look, I'm a knight. I could die at any time. If something happens to me before he turns 10, I want you to oversee his training."
And I think that it's actually a really good, actually, end cap onto Rey's character, considering how he started off, where he was just the biggest asshole you can imagine. And throughout that, and Mekai Senki, and now this, and I guess his own little mini series, though I haven't heard that it didn't turn out too well. It's a nice end cap to his character where he just kind of was like, he put aside that rivalry to take care of his son.
Right, and then he says he's going off to try to find Koga and Kaoru, so
Well, we saw where that didn't turn out well.
that takes care of him not appearing anymore too, because
Right.
he's off wherever trying to work that out.
Right. Especially considering that basically the only sign we see of Koga throughout the entire series is when he goes to claim the Garo armor, and they're like, "Well, no, he still has it. Oh, wait, never mind." Which I don't necessarily mind because it does also make it so. I know a lot of people were worrying coming into the series, like, "Well, do I have to see the previous series for it to make sense?" And no,
No.
you really don't. You can basically you can start any Garo series that is not Mekai Senki, and just go from there.
And like Mekai Senki worked because we'd had a whole series and some interstitial media in the meantime to have all the characters and the world established. So
Right.
you could do disconnected focus episodes on individuals, and as long as you had a basic familiarity with what came before, it worked just fine. Maybe not great for new viewers,
No,
but
yes.
Mekai Senki was basically just 26 episodes of fan service to the people who loved Garo for 5 years with no new media.
Right, and then Mekai Senki did so well, we are where we are now.
Right. I mean, we got two series in a row that are basically reset points for new viewers to come on.
Three, if you count Seal of Flames, because
True.
that's pulling in a whole different audience, and possibly another way for the English audience to be aware of it, thanks to Funimation.
But like, the first attempt to restart felt really strong because it had a really solid idea of what it was doing.
And it was a clean break.
And it also like pushed itself along that line the whole way.
Right.
That there wasn't a lot of meandering around before you got to the point.
Right. In this series, though, I do really like Raiga, like as a lead and as a character. He's like a nice happy medium between Koga and Ryuga, where Ryuga's an asshole, but he a lot
Well,
more free
Koga's an
spirit.
asshole too.
And Koga's an asshole, but he's by the book. While Raiga is actually a nice guy, which is strange to see for a Mekai Knight.
Yeah, I mean, like, through the first half of the series, I was assuming that Raiga's personality was more like, well, this is the influence of his mother who made sure he had a personality. But then
Really?
when we got to the training episode, it sort of became clear to me, too, that, Rei probably rubbed off a lot on him, too.
Rei and Gonza, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot of influence to actually come out like a normal-ish person.
And you can actually kind of see that in Raiga's fighting style, because one of the things people noted at first is that his fighting style does have some similarities to Koga's, whether he's transformed or not, which is good because it does actually carry over. But it's also very different. He's got hand-to-hand stuff. He uses his sheath and his sword at the same time a lot, which is almost akin to Rei's dual-bladed style, which you then thus see later on when he actually tries to fight the Horror himself as a kid, and he is wielding two separate objects. So that was a nice, obviously intentional directing decision, I think.
It's one of the things we note in Sentai and Rider a lot, where there's thought put into the way the action choreography is done, even though it might be 10 or 15 episodes before you find out that there's a reason why the whole time through it's been done this way.
Right. Because Koga, his fighting style is just very direct to the point, while Raiga has a lot of flourishes to it. You know, he's basically a show-off, which correlates to Rei.
Yeah, but at the same time, he gets the job done really well, which is, like, it's a point in the favor, but also it's kind of a complaint I have, because, like, okay, so in general, the way Garo is structured, usually the Mekai Knights are powerful enough to just defeat whatever they're fighting.
Right.
That it's not really a matter of, you know, finding that extra bit of strength to finish off, but, like, this series felt like it had the least amount of peril in any given fight of any series. I mean, maybe outside of some series endings, but that's more
I'm not really
scale
counting,
than anything.
I'm not really counting the finale, because obviously there's going to be peril there. But, you know, that is a point.
And the other thing, too, is that there was a lot of times we were shown that Raiga is, like, abnormally skillful for a knight. You know, even one who is Garo.
Right, right.
You know, he surpasses his father very obviously.
Especially in the finale when he is able to take control of the berserk form.
And, like, in a way that's kind of off-putting almost. Because, you know, they've made a show about Koga's son, who's even better than Koga is. Look at what he can do.
Gary Stu.
And, like, a great example of this is when Rei shows up and challenges him to find out if he's strong enough to take on the training. And, you know, Raiga at 10 years old is half beating his ass.
Although it is entirely possible that he might not have been, you know, fully putting his all into that.
Probably not, but still, you know, like,
I can see what you mean
he lets he lets little kid Raiga step on his sword hilt where he can't draw it up. You know, and even if he was holding back a little bit to give him a chance, I mean, it just, like, Raiga is too skillful at all points.
Is it more of a thing where you don't think he earned it as much as, say, Koga did? Or Ryu?
And I can see, like, you know, Koga probably trained him really hard while he had the chance to. But, you know, we don't know exactly how old Raiga was, but he couldn't have been too far off of 10 years old when they disappeared.
Right.
At that point, still, even with hard training, he shouldn't be that good. He shouldn't be able to, he shouldn't be able to take on, you know, even a half-hearted,
Rei.
Fully trained Rei.
Right. Yeah, I can see what you mean. Yeah, but I guess it's kind of the thing where he doesn't struggle as much, so he doesn't necessarily feel like he earns his stuff as much as the previous two Garros, I guess.
I mean, didn't we have two or three episodes that focused on Koga's childhood training?
In both series.
And, you know, the hardship that entailed.
Because we first saw how Kiba... killed it. Was it Kiba? Yeah, it was Kiba that killed his father, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, first of all, how Kiba killed his father and how the sword just sat there in the forest for years and years and years and years.
Yeah, before he had the spiritual strength to pick it up.
And then in the second series is when we got the boot camp.
Yeah.
See, so, I see, like, what you mean there.
You
I mean,
know,
even
Koga
still,
had...
the Rei episode is still one of my favorites, but I can see why that would bother somebody.
It's just like, you know, Koga was shown having severe hardships getting to be a knight.
Right.
Or getting to even the point where he could qualify to try to claim the title of a knight. And Ryoga had basically the same thing, just compressed down into one episode where, you know, he was dropped on an island with one of the familiars.
Yeah.
Left to not die for 10 years.
Until he was able to kill said familiar.
And, you know, drag his ass back to the Tribune and claim the armor. You know, it just seems like we don't see any of that struggle with Raiga, and it does seem a little bit like, you know, he's just so good he didn't have to go through all that tough stuff. You know, he just is that good and went through his training and got the armor because his dad gave it to him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I can see the issue with that.
And, like, I guess some of that's to be expected because it is Koga's son.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a thing that, you know, independent of that context, which I think is an important consideration for new viewers jumping on, it doesn't sit, like you said, he doesn't seem like he's earned it the same way previous holders of the armor have.
Right. Although standing on its own, it's not necessarily something somebody might notice.
Possibly not. But, I mean, you know, the past three series have taken time out to show that becoming a Makai Knight's damn hard.
Yeah, this is true.
You know, you suffer and go through pain for years before you actually get to that point, and it seems like that message is being dropped.
Right. But still, he does fare better than the one character in the show that I really couldn't give a shit about.
Crow?
Crow? How did you guess?
And, like, Crow seemed so interesting when they introduced him, because didn't he have, you know, like, 2/3 of a timer, and...
Yeah, well, yeah, no, what happened was, when they first show him transform, when he uses his wings, it, like, you know, takes an entire chunk out of the timer, and they never go back to that.
Right,
not
I was
once.
I was waiting for there to be some payoff to that. You know,
and
like,
I expected it, you know, when he got possessed by Iris, he was like, oh, okay, she's just going to run out that timer until he goes berserk, and then we have a giant, evil, winged Makai Knight on our hands.
Although I rather suspect that when he was possessed, the timer became irrelevant.
Probably so.
It's like being in a Makai space.
Yeah, more than likely, although you can't really tell because Garo was there the entire time too, and then Crow untransformed, so...
I know. I mean, for as much as, like, the One Who Shines in Darkness really just hand-waved the timers away.
Yeah, and the bad thing is, yeah, they hand-waved it away. They didn't even mention it. And the fact that they didn't mention it means I can just ignore that happily.
Right. But it here, came up a few times in this series, and it was always a thing in the other series that are, like...
And it turned out...
Assume the One Who Shines in Darkness is not even in this continuity...
Uh-huh.
Which is not an unfair assumption, all told.
No.
But, you know, even if you assume that it is, like, a continuity thing, you know, the other two series have shown that the timers are a big deal. This
right.
one shows the timer off, but, you know, after outside of a few instances, they ignore it completely.
Yeah, basically outside of the one instance when he'd already been in the armor for five minutes and then decided, oh, it's time to run it down now.
Yeah.
But yeah, Crow is... I would have thought a Makai Ninja would have been a lot more interesting. and it's like, there are a couple of episodes where they almost get there to make me give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. Like the giant episode. Almost. And then, you know, Raiga ends up a lot more interesting in that episode.
Well,
so,
yeah, so much so that at the end, they have to go through this, like, whole minute-long dialogue thing where it's like, no, Crow, you were totally valuable here.
Totally!
Seriously, believe me, we couldn't have done this without you.
Although
honest.
And that one, I did like the mention of Koga having saved Kaoru by, you know, taking her into the armor.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, yeah, that was kind of like... Oh man, you were so close, yet you kind of suck, dude.
Yeah.
And so for the most part, Crow was just kind of there.
But at the same time, since Raiga's personality is so different, like, when Crow was around, they actually did have a pretty decent team dynamic going on.
They do. I mean, it is a good dynamic, and there are times that I do like him. It's just that most of the time, I just don't care. And that's it's even more so than Augury, because Augury was boring, but you still had, you know, those moments where, like, he just decides to stab a dude with a bunch of arrows, and it's stupid, but it's kind of cool.
Or when he fell into the poo barrel.
Ah, oh, yes. Weren't those in the same episode? That was at the same time, though, I think.
Yes, I believe that episode was Let's Shit on Augury.
Literally!
Yeah.
Then he stabbed the horror with, you know, all those arrows, and then, you know, Ryuga still got the kill.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess it has that in common with Crow also.
Yeah, yeah.
But you kind of expect that out of a Garo series.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. Makai Senki was unique in that regard, in that, you know...
Had the Ray episodes.
The Ray episodes, the Priest episode...
And it's still nobody cares about Tsubasa, thankfully.
This is true. And the thing too is that like in the space of the last 10 episodes, they also introduced like this whole secondary supporting cast who gets no time to go anywhere.
A not jobby.
Well, it kind of a combination not Jobby, not Rekka.
Basically, yes.
Because I mean that's definitely a fusion of the two character types.
For as little characterization as she got.
And the other priest who was overseeing Mairi's maintenance.
Right. And Mayuri, I actually did like, and that was actually attributed almost less to the show in most episodes and more to the ending theme.
Yeah,
Because actually,
because like
a lot of
when you
her.
start noticing that those are little mini episodes.
Yeah, and anytime she interacted with Gonza, because basically that encompasses most of her character development more than her interactions with Raiga or Crow. It's actually Gonza, of all things.
The thing that like the thing where I felt really disappointed was one of the end segments where you find out she's been having a conversation with Zaruba for an extended period.
I would have liked to see that.
Exactly. That would have been a great thing to have in an actual episode, and you can't say they didn't have time to do that somewhere
Because
because
they had
they
the
had nothing
clip show.
but time.
They had the clip show also. Well, actually, I did actually like the clip show. I didn't watch the entire thing. I just kind of skipped to a point where sometimes in Garo clip shows, you know, there will be something at the end that's interesting. So that's
And there
basically what
was.
I did. And it was.
Yeah, no, the clip show is structured pretty well. I mean, I did watch through the whole thing, and I was entertained with how they framed it.
Yeah, and having Gonza there for the entire time is, you know, I can't complain with that. I liked also during that small fight towards the end, where the effect of having a camera look into the mirror and then seeing Garo transform behind it.
Yeah.
That is a thing that I noticed about the series, is that it almost seems like an excuse for Amamiya to try various techniques.
Yeah. Yeah, I can kind of see that.
Which kind of Garo has always been, but this one it's a lot more experimental, along with the fact that we do have original horror designs back this time.
And that, those the horror designs were all over the map too.
Yeah, some were really good. Some
Some
were.
were really good, some were like not remotely terrifying either.
Oh, yeah.
It was real, it like some of them looked like they were just Sentai suits that were left over.
Exactly. You know, I honestly like. I think like the magician horror, specifically when I saw her transform, I'm like, are we sure this isn't? She kind of looks kind of. She looks kind of like Dayu from Shinkenger.
Kinda. One that I was really amused with, though, was the house horror.
Oh, that was I would really like that one actually, because I kept wondering through the entire episode, I was like. Okay, so they have costumes for every episode, mostly. It's like, what the hell is this an entire family going to turn? Oh, well.
And see,
Good thing
through
he got
that, I was
Goten back the episode before.
through that, I was assuming that the grandfather character was the actual horror and all the other ones were projections off of him.
Projections, victims, something along those lines.
But it turned out the house was the horror and the family was the projection.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, to me, that was actually a really interesting way to go with that.
Yeah, and they kind of had a nice way of kind of like just kind of masking the fact that Raiga kind of just cut down a bunch of children by just like closing the doors and it's
Yeah, I noticed that too.
like oh okay then,
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's like at that point I was like well maybe they're you know. Pulling back on the censoring a bit, and then you get to the next episode, which was the Mantis one, and it's like, well, they go through this entire episode, and the thing that stood out to me is like, they never showed her nipples once, and this is not something I was looking for, but more to the fact that
Right.
Garo is just kind of like, you know, very upfront with that,
It's not something that you like look for specifically,
but
but
once
the
it's gone,
absence of it, the absence is conspicuous.
and that alone in that episode was enough of a tip off that something ain't right here.
Well, especially when they went to the photos on the bulletin board at the
Right,
end,
it's
and
like,
there was no cover up there.
yeah, and it's like that's a lot of photos, and then of course then you get to the reveal, and they actually do show the nudity, and it's like, oh, that's really horrifying to do it like that. It's almost it, that almost felt like a way of, like they were almost trying to make some commentary on that, but then of course the final villain is well.
I mean,
A very Amamiya final villain.
But, like, the Mantis episode was really interesting for the way that it was structured.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the more unique things Garo has done in terms of how an episode's laid out.
Right, because Raiga and the others were barely even in the episode, more or less. Mm-hmm. You just get, like, that one interstitial part where they're investigating, and they go to this part in the street, and Mayuri, you know, puts her hand down. It's like, oh, there's a psychic imprint here. He's like, oh, it must be the horror. She's like, no.
No.
Then you know they open the closet and you don't see it, and it's just like, but you see the look on Raiga's face, and then you know, good credit to his actor in that moment, because you could almost put it together what he was thinking. Like, oh no,
Raiga's actor was actually pretty good through the whole thing,
which is what you want in a Garo series.
No, but like, I mean,
but you know, especially because Garo is so much led by whoever is Garo. The actor does need to have, you know, a good presence in one way or another.
Yeah, but like, you know, for the role of Koga, you don't need a huge emotional range.
No, it's basically like playing Takeru from Shinkenger. You just know the flower really, really good.
And occasionally you show signs of sarcastic amusement.
Yes, basically.
Which are great moments, don't get me wrong, but you don't really need a lot of emotional range on screen for that, where Raiga's completely different, and, you know, he needs to be able to run from his normal, I don't want to say jolly, but
affable?
Easygoing self, I guess, to, you know, enraged or disgusted or sorrowful or whatever. You know, he's got that full range, and the actor pulls it off really nicely.
Yeah, in contrast to most Mekai Knights, he actually does react to the cases that he sees, and while he always still does the job that he needs to do, he's not cold about it, which is one of the things I do like about the character.
Like, the episode after Image was kind of a good show of that, too, because he kept hesitating to cut through the illusion of the little girl.
Even though he knew it was an illusion.
Yeah.
It's just the, you know, sight of that is enough to make anybody stop, which is, you know, a credit to his character, I think.
Yeah. But, like, going back to Crow, it's kind of completely the opposite.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to, I keep trying to think, I was like, what did he, like, again, I like the dynamic with him and Raiga, more or less, but I keep trying to think, it's like, what did he do in this series besides the finale stuff and the giant episode and be an asshole to Mayuri?
Which only lasted a few episodes anyway.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he didn't really do anything about... he didn't do anything really outside of being the sidekick character.
Yeah, and they've done better than that before, too, with Leo, or...
They did really well with Leo, which, considering he wasn't even the knight for the majority of the time, is really notable to me.
Yeah, or even, you know, I wouldn't quite, you know, call, say, Takeru a sidekick, but... He is.
Well, no, and that's the thing.
He's
about...
a secondary Mekai Knight, and even though Augury suffered in that series, Takeru had a really well done arc, I thought. You know,
and that's the thing with that series too. There's not like strictly a lead character and his sidekicks. It's basically an ensemble.
An ensemble. Although, you know, Ryuka is obviously the main character, but yeah, it is an ensemble because you do have character development for everybody but Augury.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about this through the run of Gaim, too, that actor was just completely mishandled in that series.
Which is, like, the only thing I'm looking forward to in Movie Wars Full Throttle is the fact that, you know, it's like, okay, bringing him back is kind of bullshit. But on the other hand, you're bringing back that actor. So...
Bringing him back as a cyborg, which perfectly fits within the character.
It does. Oh, I just hope there's a reference of, you know, learning lessons from Hokkaido in there. Anyway. but yeah, you know, everybody in Mekai Senki either gets a good presence of their character or development. You know, Takeru, Rian, Borai, even Sanchi.
Yeah.
Even Ryuga's mother, to an extent.
Yeah, for the amount of time that she actually has a meaningful presence in the series, she gets built pretty quickly.
She does, and when, you know, Ryuga has to kill her, you don't just feel for him, you feel
for her. It's an impactful moment.
Yes. That is also something that is a bit lacking from the series is that the plot as it is kind of almost too straightforward. There's no real wrinkles to that. The one thing you do get is the fact that Eiji or Giru,
yeah,
is Crow's master, and but you just kind of like, oh, is he? Okay,
right. It doesn't.
It's like you have that dramatic reveal, and you're like, who?
And it gives you 5 minutes of tension for when Crow goes to the alley to confront him directly, and nothing happens.
Yeah, it's like, oh, is he going to betray Raiga? Oh no, he didn't. Oh well, okay then.
He's not going to betray Raiga, and he doesn't even actually try to take down Giru. He just kind of stands there and
is
ineffective.
It also does kind of bother me that Giru's just like forgiven. It's like, okay, because I mean, let's be real. The Kai Nai Order is really, really freaking strict, even up through. Well, I mean, not really so much in The One Who Shines in Darkness, which I guess might be a sign of where they were headed. But
well, and that's kind of something I was thinking about watching through Makai no Hana. Like, if that's part of the same series timeline, obviously the Makai Knight Order is in serious decline by then.
You can see, it was like, that's really lackadaisical to let some guy, let a Makai Knight who unleashed horrors that killed a whole lot of people. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like, oh, you're not evil anymore. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like, I could forgive it more if it was like, he saw the light, he came back and helped, and then he just kind of leaves. He just sneaks off and just like, peace.
Right.
Instead of just like, oh yeah, you're forgiven. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, business as usual.
How?
Although his armor was really cool looking.
It was. I was almost surprised to see that for as little screen time as it got, it was an actual suit, considering what happened with Leo. And I guess it just ran out of budget in Makai Senki.
Well, I think it's also a sign, too, that, the Garo franchise is doing well enough that they have
profitable
more suit money to actually...
Yeah, considering that they didn't spend any money on suits in The One Who Shines in Darkness, they had plenty left over for this one.
But, I mean, it kind of worked for that series, too.
It did, but you can almost see it as a way of, like, okay, Makai Senki did well. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we can do with as little as we have and see how much money we can make from it. It's like, oh, it made a lot. Well, then, we can do whatever the hell we want now.
Yeah.
Which is...
But at the same time, that series didn't suffer for what they did to it so can't really complain.
Whoever was in charge, because I usually pay attention to who's doing what, but I really have not paid attention to the production staff for The One Who Shines in Darkness. And... because whoever was in charge of that saw what he had to work with, which was nothing at all.
Right.
Like, you have enough budget for all the CGI. It's like, okay, the basic costumes for the characters. Okay. We can lend you the Garo suit at the end of the series. Okay. But
we can lend you the Garo suit as long as you promise not to paint it.
Yes. Well, but we had this thing with the plot. We want you to do 3 Makai Knight. But wait. But you only give me 1 suit and I can't use it. Okay, let's see what we can do here. And they did pretty well. I can rewatch that. Although I think I need a palate cleanser after watching so much Garo in 24 hours.
How much did you watch in 24 hours?
Let's see. I woke up at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning for work. I had to be at 6. I just woke up really early because I fell asleep really early on Saturday night. So I watched a few episodes then, and then I watched the rest last night and this morning.
How many was that?
Well, I had left off on 7, so I started with 7.
Oh.
That's a lot in a couple days' time.
See, I spread it out over a few days at least, because I left off kind of early on, too, when I would just start getting bored watching it week to week.
Yeah, and I think it actually does marathon better than it does.
It does. I was thinking the same thing, because, you don't have that
like that. I mean, that's just, you know, what some shows end up playing out.
Well, and you know, the original Garo ran in, I think, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find out about Garo till like 2010. Right. And I didn't watch any Garo until the theatrical movie came out.
Right. I knew about Garo. I just had not ever seen it because, like, whenever I loaded up, say, TV Nihon's first episode, it's like, wow, the video quality is terrible. I'm not going to bother with this.
But, like, you know, since I didn't actually watch any Garo until 2011, I had the whole thing to marathon the first series.
First series and Midnight Sun and Red Requiem. Red Requiem. I can never say that right.
But, you know, Makai Senki did a lot better to hold you week to week.
I think if I was watching Garo the first season back in, like, the mid-2000s, that would have been such a different thing that would have been able to hold me. Because...
yeah, probably so.
Back then, at that point, it is completely unlike Sentai and Rider at the time.
Yeah, it was the most different toku there was.
Even though I think how different it is overplayed a little bit, as it is basically Kamen Rider and Devil May Cry tossed into a blender, and they hit frappe.
But it's still different from...
oh, yeah, it's still different enough.
Your typical...
and it's, not a kid's show, for one, obviously. And
right. Although some episodes kind of seem like it.
Kind of. It's like... occasionally you get that hit that one episode. It's like, was this a Kamen Rider plot? Didn't know Air Kobayashi. Well, okay. I believe... where are the... damn, I don't know where they are. Well, I mean, I know Kobayashi wrote Black Blood. I want to think that... did she work on this one? No, it was mostly written by Amamiya.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Amamiya and some fill-ins here and there.
But no Inoue, though, right?
No Inoue. Oh, I can't... I mean, I won't say that as a bad thing, because Inoue wrote one of the best standalone episodes of Makai Senki. Which
one?
The poker episode.
Oh, okay.
That had Kaisa, coincidentally.
No, I don't think it's coincidentally, because Inoue always brings in actors from previous...
and Inoue also wrote one of the best standalone episodes of Gogeiser, so it's... just, you know, let him write one episode of a show. He'll be fine. Just one! Just one, and not a movie.
Yeah.
Somewhere he has supervision. And not
keep some supervision on him was exactly what I was going to say.
It's kind of like Sakamoto. I watched Charvon the other night, and I actually enjoyed it. I was surprised.
I'm looking more forward to Scheider.
Oh, I'm looking much more forward to Scheider. But I went into Charvon with absolutely no expectations at all. And I liked it. I was like, okay. It's not bad.
It's just like going off on another little tangent, of course, but the plot twist in Charivan was so obvious from the first.
I saw that coming a mile away. I mean,
I'm serious. In the first 5 minutes of the movie, I knew where it was going and how it was going to end.
When Estevan is a repainted Gavin bootleg, you're like, oh, there's the bad guy.
Yeah. When they can't even give him a chromed suit.
Because
like, sure, the helmet's chrome, but none of the armor plates are.
That part.
He's wearing the foam rubber stunt suit.
That reminded me of late series Shinken Gold, actually. Or even early series Shinken Gold, because his helmet was always a lot shinier than the suit, and everything just got more faded as the series went on.
Yeah, they should have just stuck with a matte finish on his helmet.
Yeah. Because then you notice the helmet fading, and it's like, well, damn.
But hey, you know, the Garo suit stayed really shiny the whole time.
I do think part of that is due to effects.
Well, clearly,
yeah. But I also think that they have more than just the one Garo suit now.
we assume they had a couple extras in Makai Senki because they were actually doing stunt work with it.
And they do a lot more stunt work with this series. Because one thing this series does have definitely going for it is... it's really good on it's better on the suit action than I think any Garo series before it. Because I'm not going to count The One Who Shines in Darkness there because, well...
It had no suit action.
It had no suit action. It had CGI, and it had the awesome, you know, hand-to-hand stuff. But I think the suit action in the series is much, much better than it was in Makai Senki and in... Especially the first series. Because, you know, Raiga could actually move.
Mm-hmm. Everybody moves.
Yeah, everybody can move, and quite well. You know, occasionally it's obviously... supplemented by CGI or wire,
right?
But because, you know, Mamma Mia does love his special effects, but
when they're blended well, it doesn't matter.
There's a good amount of practical stuff mixed into that with this. It's like at first, you know, first series, there's a lot of practical stuff, and then he starts to use a lot more CGI stuff. In Makai Senki, they use a lot more CGI stuff. Here, it's a lot more of a balance, I think.
Well, and in the first series, too, I mean, the movements in the armor were really slow.
Yeah, until you got to the obvious CGI when it's like,
right,
now he's really fast for some reason.
But, you know, they've really, the in-suit action was a lot faster at this point.
Yeah.
Where it was in Makai Senki.
Yeah, and also to, you know, Raiga's fighting style, it's like, you see him, like, just punch guys in the face while in the suit, and it's like, oh. That's cool. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the series definitely has its stronger points. It's just like trying to go through it week by week, there wasn't enough catch from one episode to the next to really hold on.
It's actually honestly like one Garo series I think that could have served itself better to be 13 episodes. If you had condensed that plot down into 13 episodes, taken the stronger standalone episodes and filled them out in the middle, because it's really not enough plot to carry 25 episodes in this series.
Although, if the series had been structured to be 13 episodes, they definitely could have made the plot carry through every episode.
Yeah, they could have, along with, you know, they could have carried that through some of those better standalone episodes. Mm-hmm. And certain things, like the fact that Crow just really doesn't do anything.
It would be downplayed significantly,
and it might actually not notice as much, or you might be like, well, it's only 13 episodes, they only had so much time. Here you're like, wow, you had nothing but time and did absolutely nothing with him.
Yeah. I mean, it's a disappointment for sure, but like,
It's not like I didn't enjoy the series, because I did.
Although you did kind of give up on it early on, like, you know, not just you and me, other people end up doing the same thing.
And
I think that kind of says something about what this became.
I think it says more about the way it was structured than anything else. Because, again, I'm really glad that I watched through it because there were some really, really strong episodes in there, and I'm glad I saw them. And I really like Raiga's character, and I like Mayuri, and I loved every single thing that Gonza did in the entire series.
Gonza even got his own episode outside the clip show.
Own episode about cooking, and it made me so hungry.
I was a little disappointed, though, because, you know, the soup was basically just a bowl of clear broth when they got done. And
yeah, but the preparation...
That seems a little boring.
The preparation made me so hungry, because that was just some straight-up food porn.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
but I mean, like, for as much as they ignore the fact that Gonza should be about 150 years old.
And I think they even, like, kind of lampshade that a bit. It's like, well, I served
for three generations.
It's father and grandfather, too. I'm like, oh, have you now?
Well, okay, so, like, Koga's dad had to be about 50 when he died.
Yeah.
By the look of him.
Gonza has not aged a day.
So, you know, he was about 50, and Koga probably had hit 30 by the time he disappeared.
Probably-ish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Say early for the first series, you know, jump ahead a few years.
Yeah. You know, he was probably in his mid-30s by the time he disappeared, considering he had a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Thereabouts.
I mean, that's assuming he came back soon after the end of Makai Senki, and actually got married.
Well, yeah, assuming they were married at all.
Just it's like I can't even think of an argument against that because it's Koga. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, you do know there's another step towards that, right? I know you got to continue the family line and everything, but.
I mean, you know, I can see Koga might go along with the marriage thing just because it matters to Kaoru.
Yeah, basically. It's like,
but left to his own devices, he wouldn't care.
She had to propose.
Probably. Probably. But anyway, you know, you can assume that Koga was in his mid-30s when he disappeared, and now Raiga is probably, I would guess, 25 or so.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's,
so that's at least...
Like, probably Gonza has not been in the service of Koga's father his whole life. But, you
yeah,
know,
but he was already pretty old at the time.
There's still at least 60 years that he would have been working for that family.
So, but assume Gonza's like 50 when Taiga died.
Okay.
Then it's like 30. Then it's like 25.
Yeah, like I said, there's about
5 years old.
Yeah, there's at least 60 years of service he's had to that family.
105 years and doesn't look a day over 60.
Yeah. Well, he's Japanese.
It's all going to come at once.
I mean, I was just waiting for at some point, like, just nonchalantly someone to say, well, Gonza is kind of like a familiar. Or, you know.
But, you know, honestly, it almost sort of works better that nobody comments on it at all.
Yeah, I know.
It's just like, I want a show now about Raiga's son.
And Gonza's there,
Gonza's
yeah.
Just there. And, yeah. And Raiga's son's, like, in his mid-40s. And Gonza's just there. Or they have the Ryuga movie and Gonza just shows up. It's like 100 years later. Gonza's the only one alive.
Man. That might be pushing it a little, though.
It might be.
For him to just show up and be like, I knew 3 generations of Garos.
And then somebody screwed it up. I don't know who. Because we know it wasn't Coconut. So everybody's down.
Raiga.
Yeah, so it's like, or was it? Because, like.
Well, and see, like, if they wanted to bridge the two series together.
If they did, but they clearly don't.
No, I'm just kind of, like, spitballing here, though. Like, if they wanted to bridge the two series, you know, it would be very easy to do a movie or something focusing on Raiga getting his parents back and the process of that turns the armor black and essentially loses it to him.
Basically sacrifices Garo to save his parents.
Right, which, you know, Koga would never be very happy with.
No,
but at the same
not.
Time, you know, there is a way to bridge them with what we have shown to us.
Yeah, I mean, that, I would not necessarily complain with that.
Yeah, it's just like, I know why they don't want to do it, because they don't want to bookend eras or whatever. However they're looking at this, they don't want to close off. They don't want to close the walls between them. They want to have room to still make more series in the original setting and probably in the other setting too, since, I mean, it's getting a movie, so obviously people liked it.
Yeah, which I am definitely looking forward to, and also curious as to just what kind of style it'll be, because if it's a movie, it probably has a bigger budget than the TV series. And with the armor gold again at the end of the TV series, will they use suit or will they just rely on CGI again? Or
which that's going to come down to budget, I think.
Oh, definitely.
I'm really more about, like, you know, what the story is going to be, because The One Who Shines in Darkness was so much tied to the whole thing with the magic horrors, which are all done with.
Yes, they're quite dead.
You know, so I mean, it would have to be a completely different thing, and, you know, how well is that version of Garo going to play with what might be a more traditional Garo setup?
Maybe. Although, on the other hand, the last theatrical movie was anything but traditional. And that was Koga.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, you know, The One Who Shines in Darkness had a very unique situation to itself.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah,
you know, they could invent something new again, but that might also seem a little bit like, well, we're just going to start making stuff up to, you know, keep this different from the others, even if it doesn't really make sense within the context of the universe.
In fairness, that's kind of what they did in the first place there. It's like, we need something different to explain.
Right, and doing it once is great.
Yeah.
If you do that every time you visit that setting,
that's true.
Then it starts to wear.
Yeah, and I might like to see how, Ryuga handles the more traditional stuff at the same time.
Yeah, let's see how Ryuga handles a giant naked woman. Take however you want.
That would... No.
That's true, that might be more up to Karu's alley.
Yes, you
want to
see how Takeru handles a giant naked woman. He's like, I've dreamed this moment. Curse that character development.
Well, it's okay. He left and he'll forget all about that. Except for every time he looked at, what used to be his hand.
Yeah, that's not going to be a big turn on for the ladies, probably.
Well, maybe if he gets like a hook or something.
I thought you said hooker for a second. I was like, or that.
Well, maybe that too. Never know.
Yeah, I just want to see him like accessorize, just like, start plugging other things onto it. A sword, a hook, an axe. Just make it so he can hot swap them.
Yeah, USB.
Just plug his swords onto it.
Well, I mean, I was kind of expecting them to do something like that at the time. But,
yeah.
Of course, we're getting off subject again. Sort of.
Sort of. Garo, so.
Well, yeah. Well, the whole point was to talk about Makai no Hana.
Oh, yes, this is true.
But, just looking back at it, that movie episode was a really solid early episode. And I think it gave some false impressions.
Maybe. Because like the first few episodes were, standard first episode stuff.
Right. I mean, it's a reintroduction to that setting because we hadn't had that since 2012.
Yeah. For a couple of years. And Richard's setting, introduced Raiga, established, who he is, introduced Gonza, what Mayuri is, Crow. Mm-hmm. Kind of seems kind of cool at first. We learn better. And then you have the movie episode. It's like, holy shit. I like the following episode where we got to see Crow transform for the first time. You had the guy from Black Blood returning in a role that was actually, more compelling than anything in Black Blood.
Well, and I kind of wonder if they didn't introduce Goten too early.
Yeah, because they introduced Goten. Well, they introduced Goten.
Goten gets used two more times.
Yeah, that was an awesome episode. And then they use him against the house, which is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
Although that house episode could have always shifted further later in the series, because it really meant what it mattered. Right. And then
Goten's used to pursue possessed Crow. I think
that's it. That's all Goten is used for. And it's kind of like,
Goten doesn't even actually figure into the final battle because Zarba says they can't use him again because reasons.
Because we wanted to do something else, basically. Like, basically. Goten can be used anywhere you freaking want. Down a city street, around buildings, in the Makai realm itself.
Yeah.
Non-stop.
Ah, there was a third use. I think he did use it when he was... sucked into the magic box.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. All the same, I think that episode where they go into that stuff about how he became a Makai Knight, if you'd placed that after the Rey episode, that would have worked a lot better.
Yeah, you're right.
Then you go the entire series, you don't really know anything about his past, and you cut that little bit out of the clip show also.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the Ray episode. Then you get him going to the tower to get himself cleansed. It just shuffled things around a little bit, I think, would have helped the pacing a lot.
Well, and if you move Goten's introduction to the back half of the series, you also kind of sidestep how little it ended up getting used because...
Yeah. And actually make it seem climactic instead of just, oh, hey, here's Goten. Cool.
See you in 10 episodes.
Basically. Now, see you in 2 episodes... And then 10 episodes again.
Right.
And then 5 after that.
For a minute.
Yes.
But no, I mean, like, it would have worked to use Goten just a little bit in the back half because, you know, there would have been an appropriate number of opportunities. There wouldn't have been situations where it's like, well, you know, you could call the horse out and
You have
then.
a situation in which Raiga rides Crow.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of ridiculously cool in the way it was done, but at the same time, it's like, you have a horse, dude.
But can his horse fly?
No, but like Koga did something very similar with Goten and Makai Senki that they did in that episode with like that whole spiraling wave of death.
Well, that's the thing though, because like, you know, every power-up form is unique to the person who generates it.
That's true.
So it doesn't all pass down, just like, you know.
Or in Koga's case, unique to the fight at hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the stuff does seem to react to the situation as much as the person using it or in the situation. You know, I don't think there would be another situation where Raigo would get his what would you even call that, what he turned into at the end?
I don't. I mean, it was, you know, really bulky, obviously, but I did think it was kind of cool because they haven't used that, you know, demonic form of the Makai Knight since the first series when Koga lost his shit. So that is one highlight of the finale where you actually get to see that again, and that's pretty cool. And him taking over it, even though, you know, Gary's through Deus Ex Machina, it's also cool because that is different.
Yeah. Because,
And
like, through
then
most of this, I
using
was like.
to like make, have a fusion of that form and a regular Garo form is a cool final form.
Yeah, I mean, he basically managed to combine the two states of the armor to get something stronger than both of them. But, like, I mean, through most of this watch through, I was like, okay, so when we get to the end of the series, what is he going to do to the armor to fight the final battle? Because it always goes that way.
Yeah, even though
You
in
know,
the one
in the one
chance
who shines in darkness, that was just, you know, the armor turning gold again.
Yeah, the armor turning gold and then turning Zen and Gai gold as well for a minute.
Right. I mean, there wasn't a significant form change, but since the armor was black the whole rest of the series, it was.
It was a change.
Yeah.
And that was more of an emotional significance also, so.
Well, and that was more fitting to the characters that were involved.
Well, especially considering that his mother also, you know, longed for that, and she got to see it before he had to skewer her.
Right. You know, having something beyond that wouldn't have really fit that situation, but for this worked and fit the style of these series. Because, like, you know, the more I sit and think about it, the more it seems like you do have to take the one who shines in darkness as an independent entity
Right. That is
and
unique.
not look at it as some point along this timeline, because wherever the hell it would fit, I mean, it's not having an impact.
Right, and I mean different creators, so. But and that's kind of how I'm going to be approaching Seal of Flames once I watch that. Also, just kind of waiting for it to be a little bit further along.
You want to have some episodes of Marathon?
Yeah, I have some episodes of Marathon. You know, watching several things right now, although one thing less because I just got to a point where I was watching the stream for Superhero Time, and I just finally hit. I was like, I could sit here and finish watching Drive, or I could go take a crap.
So you did what JD would do.
Basically, then I came back and watched Precure and hated myself all that much more because that sucks too. So, Toei's not
Okay.
knocking it out of the park for me right now. But I'm watching a
Apex
lot of, you
Future.
know, I'm watching several other things, so it's like, I'll just, you know, I'll wait because Gundam is more important.
Or at least Build Fighters.
Well, yes. I'm behind on G-Reco too, but
I haven't watched any of that because, like, I think I'm at a point where I can't take serious Gundam anymore.
well, have you seen the ending theme to G-Reco? Because Serious Gundam in that series, I mean, it's more serious than Build Fighters, yes.
That's what I mean, though. Like, you know, Build
Okay.
Fighters is a different kind of thing, and the other is, like, you know, a normal, more normal, I guess, Gundam series, and
It's a thing. It's a
They don't really sit well with me in general, though,
Oh, well, no,
anymore.
I can understand that.
You know, the ones I've already watched and have internalized, that's one thing.
Right.
But you know, like
going into, you just can't take it. Can't take the red, white, and blue robots, giant robots, as seriously anymore.
Well, it's like, you know, trying to watch Unicorn. That didn't really work out too well for me. I think I got two episodes into that before I decided to give up.
The thing about Unicorn, I did not watch it until just before episode 7 came out. So I did not, you know, try to go through 5 years of waiting between episodes.
Well, it wasn't even that so much as just, like, I hated every character and every situation the whole message that they were trying to push across.
Oh, well, the final plot twist is kind of stupid, so...
Even better to not watch, then. And, you know, I tried picking up Age at various points, and that wouldn't stick,
no.
But...
No. No. Oh, no.
But, you know, between those things, it's just like... First season of 00, I had trouble sticking to.
Age is bad.
Right, but like, you know, first season of 00, I even had trouble with that. It wasn't until the second season that I was able to really, like, catch on with it.
You know, and like we've discussed, that is like the exact opposite opinion I tend to see online a lot of times.
But I think that's because the second half of 00 actually made it more like...
A traditional Gundam series?
The shows I had familiarized myself with over the years.
That makes sense.
But, you know, there's also Gundam Seed Destiny, which everybody agrees, pretty much.
Gundam Seed Destiny and Age kind of occupy that same territory now. both of them went on for a year.
It's just refreshing, though, that, you know, however far in... Everybody basically feels the same way about Gundam Seed Destiny.
Basically, except Japan.
Well, who cares about Japan?
Yeah, they only make it. although, I mean, it's like... But yeah, you know, but I do... Honestly, I do like that they were willing to just say, you know what? We're just going to have two different kinds of Gundam series. We're going to have the serious one. We're going to have the... lighthearted, kid-friendly one. We're going to have them both at the exact same time because think of all the Gunpla we will sell. I mean, think of all the variety you'll have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think anybody's under the illusion that it's not, you know, selling kids.
Oh, no.
If they are under that illusion, they should stop it.
It's like you have two series going over the holiday season.
Just like last year.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was the one series last year, but it was over the holiday season, and...
Yeah, and they're still selling...
It's kind of hard to miss the message in that.
Yeah. Still selling stuff from Unicorn 7. They're going to be selling stuff from Origin 1 here soon, so, you know, it's like...
Origin, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That I do want to watch. Because I never got around to reading the Origin, but I like some of the ideas.
There's still... The people releasing it now are still chugging along, and they're well past where Viz left off back in the early 2000s.
I was going to say, isn't Origin like an adaptation killer?
Basically, an adaptation killer?
Yeah. You know, when they're localizing it, whoever's doing it ends up getting stopped partway through for one reason or the other.
Oh, well, no, it's just one time. Viz was releasing it almost simultaneously with Japan, and they weren't releasing it in volumes. They were releasing it in, like, because if we don't have a Gundam Ace over here, they were releasing it in, like, you know, issues. That doesn't really work with the manga market, as it turns out.
Oh, well, if they actually get it done, that'll be impressive.
They're well on their way, because there is a point in Origin, like, after Jabro, it goes for, like, 2 or 3 volumes, and it's literally just Char's origin. Like, from, you know, when he and Sailor were kids, all the way up to when he infiltrates Side 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously, it gets to a point where stuff just kind of, like, okay, that could not, you know... correlate with the anime series, but it's its own thing, so...
Well, I mean, it could totally just, you know, be an episode.
Oh, no, well, I mean, it wouldn't really sync up, I don't think. Not entirely. Because you have stuff like the fact that mobile suits actually existed before the 1 Year War, which they didn't. But yeah, Yaz goes through his entire origin for, like, literally just, like, they stop the entire, Amuro's entire plot just, like, stops for 3 whole volumes, and it's like, okay, sure.
How much time does 3 volumes cover? In publishing terms?
Well, actually, it might be longer than that, because now that I think about it, every English volume is two Japanese volumes.
Well, I'm just trying to look at it from the perspective of, like, so in terms of how many weeks or months
well,
this
that
went on.
Origin was a monthly series, because Gundam Ace only comes out monthly. That's a long-ass time.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out how long they basically stopped the main storyline to explore.
Let's see, I just have a volume 6 sitting here. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, there's 8 chapters, so it's about 4 chapters per volume, I think. So that was a lot. They literally just stopped the plot just to tell you about Char.
For it's almost actually, a year.
Yeah, basically. And I don't think anybody complained.
Well, no, because it's Char.
Because it's Char.
Yeah. It probably actually made sales go up.
Probably did. Although it's Gundam Ace, they don't really have to worry about sales at all, because
point
it's the Gundam magazine.
Yeah,
it's going to sell.
Mm-hmm. So did we cover everything we wanted to about Garo?
I think so, more or less. I think it's a good series. It's just going week to week. It's not as strong, and it's not as strong as basically any series in the franchise so far, but. Mm-hmm. It does have stuff worth watching, and honestly, though, it might be best to just, like, ask somebody who liked it, what are the good episodes? Then, kill a few hours like that.
Yeah.
Because there's not really a very pressing overarching plot. The plot itself is basically condensed to 3 episodes at the very end of the series.
Pretty much.
So.
Pretty much. I mean, there's some check-ins along the way.
More or less, kind of, but you...
Well, I mean, there's the one episode where they're in Mayuri's head because...
Yeah, there's that.
Which, then... helps to establish some of her background.
But that's why I say, you can basically get a checklist of
the important episodes. Important
episodes that might, be... It might end up to half the series, because, you start with the first couple, and you go with the monster episode, and Crow's first transformation, the... when he gets Goten back... The Mansions episode, the House episode, I think. Ray, the Dream episode. You could probably fill out half the series like that.
And the thing is, like, the other half series worth of episodes aren't necessarily bad.
No.
But, like, they may not objectively hold onto your interest if you don't already care a little bit about this stuff.
Basically, the universe and the setting. There's a lot of episodes where I could see it's like, if we were reviewing this on the show, it probably wouldn't go over well. But I like it because I care about this is Koga's son.
Mm-hmm.
And the things
at the same time, me and you care quite a bit about this franchise and the universe, but we both stopped watching to focus on other stuff, whereas with any previous series, that never would have happened.
And it didn't. And it's like, I will say that, even stuff I'm enjoying, sometimes I will just, fall off of it for months. But that, now that you mention it like that, since Mekai Senki, that's never happened with Garo.
Right. I mean,
the only reason I haven't, I'm not, caught up on Seal of Flames is because I literally just, I'm waiting for there to be a large chunk of it to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a very busy season.
Mm-hmm. Well, for you.
Yeah.
I'm barely watching anything.
there's a good amount of stuff this season, and there's still some stuff that I still need to watch that's come out beyond Seal of Flames.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think that's like the takeaway here, though. Like, in a week-to-week format, whereas we would normally prioritize the Garo series very highly,
mm-hmm.
we totally didn't with this one.
Yep.
Despite our best efforts.
Oh yes, definitely. And it's like, Mekai Senki, if I could have gotten other people watching it at the time, I would have totally covered that week to week.
Right.
And tried with this one. It's just I can understand why it would not hold some, and I can't begrudge them at all for that.
Well, and there's the other thing too, that, an average Garo episode in this format has like, 80 to 100 lines of dialogue.
If that.
And one thing we don't do that much is, draw out descriptions of action sequences.
No!
Which is pretty much like, all we have, so...
No, it's like, since episodes, we'll talk about everything up until like, oh, then there was a mecha fight.
Yeah.
So, 5 minutes.
And then we only really, go into any detail with that if, like, it pulls out a giant train penis, or there's Megazord-sized furniture.
Or if it's something like, or if it's something like Ducati's Punch. It's an open, it's an open-ended jab!
Yeah. But, like, you know, with... The One Who Shines in Darkness was really more like a Gaim kind of thing, wherein there was a lot of story in each episode, so there was a lot to sit and talk about.
Yeah. And it still had its fair share of standalones, but there were, now that I look back at it, because, like, Makai Senki had a lot of plot, but it had a lot of plot in the second half of the show. Mm-hmm. They front-loaded the first half with all their standalones, and then the entire second half was basically a sequentially running plot. Mm-hmm. Whereas in The One Who Shines in Darkness, the entire second half of the episode was a sequentially running plot, but you also had a lot in the beginning, setting up Inho and setting up Ryuga's relationship, or as such as it was, with the police. and, you know, eventually becoming a, you know, fugitive, and mm-hmm. all that stuff was in the first half.
Yeah. No, but I mean, that's kind of my point, where, like, there was a lot of stuff to discuss just within, you know, how every episode impacted the setting and the context of the other episodes.
Right, right, right.
You know, there was a lot to actually cover, even if the episode's specific events didn't take a long time to summarize, is kind of where I was going with it. And
eventually, you know, we finally got to a point where it's like, oh, it's an augury episode, but it's also a plot episode, which is more important here. Plot. Oh,
the plot. Yeah.
plot into Kara seeing that girl's dead family, and mm-hmm. Oh, and I guess it's an augury episode too.
Yeah.
Oh, poor augury, you suck.
Such a waste of potential, really. But yeah, I think that's pretty much our take on Makai no Hana. It's not a bad series. It's just probably the weakest entry in the franchise.
Which is not it's not to necessarily undersell it. It's just compared to what it's
more of a damning with faint praise kind of situation. Yeah. I think
it's when you consider what the pedigree is. It's it's good. It's just not,
and I think if they come back to Raiga's generation for another series, they could probably do better.
Oh, I would almost certainly say they could, because you have that all set up.
You've got your secondary cast in place. You've got the relevant updates to the universe basically laid down, and you know, you can just kind of jump in and hit the ground running and actually do
something with Crow at all.
Well, I was gonna say do like an actual plot line through the series.
Yeah, but you know, add a couple more characters. You know, flesh out what you have, and they could do a lot better. Although I don't know if there's any sign of that, if they will be doing another series in the spring, because right now they do have Seal of Flame started literally the week after Makai no Hana ended, which is also an unusual thing for Garo, because
there's usually a year in between.
Yeah, there's usually like 6 months.
But since it's a transition from live action to anime.
Yeah, even I mean, it's obviously they placed it then because it wouldn't be competing with itself in any way. Mm-hmm. But and I think it is airing on the same channel, because I think they're both TV Tokyo. Mm. I don't know if it's the same time slot. It might well be. Because I think when it's not Garo, that time slot is anime normally anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pervy midnight anime.
Basically, especially considering...
Well, no. One thing I remember...
That's very apt to the first episode of Seal of Flames, which I have seen.
So I've heard.
And the perviness does not just, you know, stop with females on that time, and for once.
But, like, you know, when we were getting set up to record, I was saying how I don't really remember much about when we did the segment for Makai Senki. One thing I do remember is us spending about 15 minutes sitting, looking at the schedule on that website to try to figure out...
What replaced it.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, what time it aired on what day and what was there now, and...
Just kind of get a feel of what is usually in that time slot.
Yeah, because, like, we were coming up with a lot of pervy anime titles that were around and in that space.
Right, right. I think it was... I can't remember what it was then, now. It was something that I didn't even care for, so...
Well, there you go.
I remember recognizing it, and I'm like, oh, that, okay.
No, I just remember the event. I don't remember what we learned from it.
Right.
As is typical. Which is pretty much, you know, how that old segment exists in my head. I remember we did it, I just don't remember what we learned from it.
Basically.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, maybe, you know, it's normal to have a year between the live-action series, so maybe in the spring there actually will be a follow-up to this, or, you know, some word of some continuation, because I think there's potential here. They just need to be more focused on telling an actual story and not do a lot of, you know...
just standalones.
Yeah, don't do a lot of spinning wheels with untested characters.
Right. Of course, then again, there's no telling because Amamiya doesn't necessarily... He's never really done this stuff, like, consecutively.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he did this first series, and 5 years later, there was Red Requiem. never going to get that right. And then, you know, a year or so later, there's Mekai Senki. Mm-hmm. Then a year or so after that, there was Koga in Wonderland. Then he did something else entirely.
Mm-hmm. Then wasn't that when he was doing Go Raigan?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I meant by something else entirely.
Okay.
Him and Inoue.
Yeah, I only saw a few episodes of that because Grumps and Spandex ended up dropping it.
Oh.
Can't imagine why.
I never saw any of it, so I have no idea what it was like.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Okay, well then. And then finally, he's like, he came back to Garo. So, mm-hmm. No. I wouldn't expect him to just, you know, jump back into it. But it's obviously the franchise is still going strong because you have now Garo's coming back to SH Figure Arts.
Mm-hmm.
They have an anime series, which is picked up for international distribution, which is the first thing, first for the franchise at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect there's something besides the One Shot into Darkness movie coming up.
Mm-hmm. I would think there would have to be. They're not gonna let it go and rest while it's going really strongly.
Yeah, it's kind of yeah. This company doesn't strike me as one that does that because I mean, obviously they have seen that there was a popularity for it, so they've been doing stuff every year now since Mekai Senki.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, you get some popular animes and they're really popular at the time, and you know, you think now they should strike while the iron's hot. Just, you know,
Tiger and Bunny,
Attack on Titan.
I'd rather think of Tiger and Bunny.
Well, it's an apt comparison because they both kind of do the same thing. It's like, okay, this series is really popular. We should capitalize on it. We're going to wait a year and a half and do a compilation movie. And it's the exact thing that Attack on Titan is doing this fall.
Good thing I don't care about Attack on Titan.
I did at the time. Then I've read further along. I don't anymore.
Okay.
There's a point of suspension of disbelief in any kind of setting. I can accept coincidences. And then that's just, you think we're stupid, don't you? That's how I feel about Attack on Titan.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it's popular as hell.
Well, if Tiger and Bunny's any indication, that'll fade before too long.
Yeah, Tiger and Bunny makes me sad because it's such a good series, and they just let it
Tiger and Bunny had a really strong first half. I didn't really care for the second half of the series that much after the time skip.
It has some issues. But overall, mm-hmm. I mean, overall, it's a really good series. It's a really good new IP.
It's another one of those things where, like, there's really good setting here.
Right.
And some world building, and they just needed to work a little harder on it.
Yeah, but it's like a really good new IP. Wait forever for a compilation movie. And then, year after that, they finally do an actual original movie. At that point, I still have not cared enough to go see it.
I didn't even know that happened, so there you go.
Yes, there is a movie taking place after the end of the series, a couple of years post.
Uh-huh.
That's really all I know about it, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, I think we're about done here, so we probably beat the Garo thing as much as we care to, since we're trailing off into other things that we feel have misstepped. So,
let's say, compare and contrast.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I think we've covered all the major points we really had in mind for this, and you know, we got almost an hour and a half episode out of it, which is not bad for just the two of us sitting here talking about one thing.
Yes, it is.
It is bad?
No, I mean, no, it isn't.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. Don't mind.
Had some oil today, Ken?
We have also sat here talking about it for an hour and a half.
Yes. So, next week we'll be back with a normal, well, normal, superhero time with our usual shows, perhaps minus
show?
One.
Because I'll talk great things about this week's Tokyuger. I will talk about how I went to take a dump during this week's drive as well. Count on it!
Well, I think I'm going to call on you when it comes time for the drive summary, because
I don't know what happened.
No, just like the whole take a dump thing has to be used.
There was a roid mute, I guess. the one thing I remember distinctly sticking out of my mind, and I haven't watched the subs to confirm this. I'm not even sure if I want to because I want this preserved in my head. Is that it seems like at one point they were sitting around, you know, talking about like who could the Kamen Rider be, and I'm just sitting there. And
I think I know the scene you're talking about.
Because this episode opens with, you know, Drive getting out of the Trideron. And he's already transformed, but it's the Trideron. It's parked outside the police precinct all the time. Reyna is spying on him. Mm-hmm. And even still, later in the episode, the only other thing I remember is that Drive is driving around in the Trideron. And Kiriko is right there in the passenger seat. How do you idiots not know?
Right, so, like, basically, you know, there's a scene where they're sitting around trying to figure out who Drive is. And so Shinosuke's sitting there. He's got the thing strapped to his wrist. He's holding a shift car.
Yes!
And I'm saying to the people I'm watching...
He has the holster thing always hanging off his hip, even when he's just, you know, standing around.
And I'm
the
saying
shift
to people,
cars are always on his person. Just like Drive.
And I'm saying to the people I'm watching the stream with, I wonder if it could be the person who's driving around the special car that Shinosuke has, or, you know, if it's the person who Kiriko's hanging around with all the time, like she hangs around with Shinosuke all the time, and, you know, just things along that line. Basically the same things you were coming up with. But, like, no, they're sitting around trying to figure out who he is, and he's got all the toys on him. And, you know... And then you take a dump.
Yeah, and it's like a suspension of disbelief, toy placement. I can accept all of that. And it's like I was talking to somebody who was unfamiliar with the franchise talking about product placement in Precure. And I'm like, trust me, believe it or not, those giant pink plastic toys can get a lot worse. Just go back half an hour, trust me.
You've been listening to Superhero Time. Go to tokupodcast.com for show notes and to listen to previous episodes. Find us on iTunes or download our Android app at tfradio.net/android. Follow us on Twitter for show updates, weekly power playback, and more at superhero_time. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.